Good morning and welcome to a special edition of A Vision for You. My name is Larry Kay. I reside in Chicago and I'll be the host for the presentation today. And today is Sunday, March 1st, 2026. I'll give you the share ID numbers for Friday, February 27th. I have them as the following. For the 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time meeting on Friday, that number is 23,245. That's 23245. For the 10 a.m. meeting, 23,246. That's 23246. This morning, A Vision for You presents Living by Spiritual Principles, My Personal Journey. And our presenter, she's going to share her personal story of transformation as a result of the 12 steps. You know, in step one, we are confronted with our powerlessness over food. And in step two, the word power is introduced again in relation to coming to believe that a power greater than human power can restore us to sanity. And then, of course, in step three, we demonstrate a willingness to turn our will and our life over to the care of that power by way of a decision, right? A decision that will propel us into the work, into the action that is suggested. And perhaps, you know, one can say there are two powers in the rooms of OA. There's the power of the fellowship and the power of the program of action. And clearly these two legs of recovery are not the same thing. They inform each other, but they are distinct components. The fellowship, you know, the meetings we attend, the speakers we hear, the food plan, the other tools, the lovely slogans we hear, all fellowship, all terrific handrails of support while we work the program of action. And then, you know, the program of action is the 12 steps. And that's not conjecture, it's a fact. And why is it a fact? Because it's in our text. In the chapter entitled, There Is a Solution, the first half of the chapter speaks primarily to the power of the fellowship. And the second half of the chapter about that solution speaks about the power of the program of spiritual action. Now, needless to say, we can't stay sober on just one of these two powers. We're going to need both. And why is that? Well, the fellowship alone is not sufficient. I personally got sober on the fellowship. We all do. In other words, we first put down the food, our alcoholic foods, with support from the fellowship, support and guidance, nurturance, all that stuff. But what is unquestionably true is I can only stay sober on the program of spiritual action. Page 20, first paragraph in the chapter, There Is a Solution, says, you know, you may have already asked yourself, why is it that all of us became so very ill from drinking, in our case, eating? And doubtless you are curious to discover how and why, in the face of expert opinions to the contrary, we have recovered from a hopeless condition of mind and body. If you are an alcoholic who wants to get over it, you may already be asking, what do I have to do? That's what it says. And it goes on. It's the purpose of this book, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, to answer such questions specifically. We shall tell you what we've done. So what is it they've done? Well, I personally can find no better answer to that question than on page 15 in the AA 12 and 12. And I'll read it to you. It says, AA's 12 steps are a group of principles, spiritual in their nature, which if practiced as a way of life can expel the obsession to drink and enable the sufferer to become happily and usefully whole. And joining us this morning to share her journey in navigating through that program of action, through the 12 steps and undergoing a spiritual awakening is Cheryl L. from Florida. And she is committed to the implementation of the 12 steps and 12 traditions as a way of life. So it's with much gratitude that we welcome Cheryl to the line this morning. Good morning, Cheryl. And Cheryl, press star one.
Good morning, Larry. Can you hear me okay?
There you are. I can. You're coming through great. Thanks, Cheryl. Thanks so much.
All right. Thank you. Good morning, everyone. My name is Cheryl L. I am a recovered compulsive overeater, and I live in the state of Florida. By God's grace and mercy, I've been recovered for about 3.5 years now, and I'm so totally delighted to be with you all today. I'm really humbled, to be honest with you. This was kind of a surprise that came to me, and but I was taught that if you can do it, you should say yes, and it's an opportunity for some more spiritual growth. So that's what I'm going with today. I want to thank a few people. I want to thank the sponsors who have helped me along this way. I've had a couple of sponsors, and each one of them has given me a gift that is priceless. And I also want to thank the women that I sponsor and the women that I have worked with over the years that I've been in recovery. I have a story that is a relapse story, and so I want to offer before I start today, I do want to say a prayer because I do try to live by God's direction today. The prayer I'm going to offer today is the third step prayer, and I've tried to make it personal to me and my what's going on inside of me. So God, I offer myself to you. I offer my hurts, my joys, my being, my flaws, and my abilities to you. To build with me as you will, to be my lead in recreating my life. Relieve me of the bondage of self, my self-will, my selfishness, my self-pity, and self-recrimination, that I may do your will. I do this best by serving others, by taking care of myself, and by being open to giving and receiving love. Is take away my difficulties, my defects of perfectionism, laziness, judgment, and control. Three over these may be a witness to your power, your love, and your way of life. May I do your will always. Amen. So the topic of my talk, Living by Spiritual Principles, came to me in quiet time over a couple of weeks when I was first invited to do this special edition. As I reflected on my journey, I noticed that I would frequently select one word, a spiritual principle from the steps or from the big book, that I may better incorporate the 12 steps into my daily life. That one word would give me focus for the day, and it continues to help me to this day. In page 42 of the big book, it specifically mentions spiritual principles where it says, quite as important was the discovery that spiritual principles would solve all my problems. I've since been brought into a way of living infinitely more satisfying and I hope more useful than the life I lived before. So what are these spiritual principles? In the simplest form for me, they are the opposite of my character defects. They are the values that I had been taught that I always wanted to live up to. But because I have a disease of more, because my instincts were in collision, I was never able to do that. I was always grabbing for more of what I thought I needed. In Bill's story on page 13, Abby told Bill that if he brought God into the picture, that he would enter into a new relationship with his creator, that he would have the elements of a way of living which answered all his problems. The essential requirements of this way of life were willingness, honesty, and humility. As I tell my story today, I hope to weave the principles into my share and to show how through my stories how I have been transformed. I was a person who was overrun by my character defects. Today I'm aware of them, and today I work on those character defects. And I try to be of maximum service to God and to the people about me. So I'd like to start by just giving you a little bit of a background on me. I'm 65 years old. I've been in Overeaters Anonymous and attending Vision for You meetings since September of 2022. And thank God since that day, I have not found it necessary to try my own way again. I am married. My husband and I moved to Florida a couple of years ago. We're originally from New England. I was the oldest of three children. My mother and father have since passed, as has my sister, and I had a younger brother who also passed. So the one blood relative I have in my life today is my my brother, and my brother is a very important part of my story, a very important part of my life today. I have nieces and nephews and great nieces and great nephews that they just bring me a lot of, most of them bring me a lot of joy. There's some pain, there's some difficulty there as well. And, you know, I've had to work with that. When I go up north to visit now, I seek to what I can bring into those situations, what I can bring to my relatives to make their lives better. But I know that I have no control over their lives. I know that they have a higher power too, and it's not me. And so a lot of reduction of pride has happened, you know, over the years because of my becoming a lot more willing to listen to the God of my understanding. I retired just a year ago, and I have to say that this past year has been a very, very transformative one. In getting ready for this talk today, I've read some of my old journals. I like to write. Writing is a very important tool for me. And so writing has come easily for me over the years. And in the course of reading these journals, I've discovered that the person that I was before I came to a vision, before I retired even a year ago, was a different person than the one I am today. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about, you know, what, as it says in the big book on page 58, our stories disclose in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we are like now. And so what I used to be like, I was raised in a very religious home. I went to church. I went to parochial school for a number of years. As the oldest child, I was expected to be a good role model for my brother and sister. I took that responsibility pretty seriously. And what I did with that responsibility is I tried to get them to follow my direction. And you can only guess how that worked out. My parents would go away, you know, go for dinner, and I'd be in charge, and I'd be trying to get them to do this and that, and they just completely ignored me. I felt different from a very young age. I felt apart from, I felt in my family like my mother and father were a team, my brother and sister were a team, and I was kind of left out there hanging and struggling to find my way in the family, struggling to find my way in the world. I was a loner. I spent a lot of time reading, and I spent a lot of time listening to music and in my bedroom. I think food was an issue for me from the very start. I do believe it's part of my DNA. The stories told about my parents, my grandparents actually buying baby food for me because I ate it in such large quantities. And I don't know if eating three jars of baby food at a mealtime is normal or not, but I kind of got the feeling that it wasn't. And I really like sweets, you know, as a child. I would always be looking for the cookies, for the batter bowl, for the meringue on the top of the lemon meringue pie my mother would make. And I started to get into some trouble with it, you know, from a pretty early age. When I was sent off to parochial school, I was given money to buy lunch there, and I would use it at the candy store. You know, we had a school, a store there, and I would go and spend it on candy. And then for some reason, they would give me lunch anyway. So I'd be eating lunch and eating candy. And at the end of the school year, my parents would be getting this huge bill for all the lunches I hadn't paid for. You know, so there were consequences for my behavior from a very early age. I've gained weight, you know, quite a bit. My dad would try to get me to exercise, and I wasn't big on exercise at all. I was kind of lazy. And so I really bucked him on that. And so I put weight on. And by the time I was in eighth grade, I was 5'10", so I was tall. I could carry a lot of weight, but nonetheless, I was overweight. And I just kept putting the weight on. When I went away to the parochial school, again, I felt different because I was with these girls whose families, whose parents owned companies, and my parents were school teachers, so I felt different. I felt apart from them. And I would seek out the ones who were also felt apart from. We would kind of band together. We were kind of on the outside. I put myself into this category that I was an outsider. I wasn't an athlete. I wasn't really a scholar. And so I didn't fit in anywhere. I found alcohol when I was about 16 or 17 years old. My mother, unfortunately, died from the disease of alcoholism at a young age. And at the age of 16, my mother thought it was okay for me to start drinking with her. She thought I was responsible enough to handle it. And so my mother and I became drinking buddies. And when my mother died from the disease at the age of 48, you would have thought that was a warning sign for me. But instead, what I did was I used that as an excuse to drink even more and to eat even more. I finally sobered up in 1996 and came into the mother program here. And I was able to, I've been able to stay sober for all of these years. But what I basically did, and I've heard this said on the meetings, is that I switched chairs on the Titanic because I basically went from the addiction of alcohol to the addiction of food, my first addiction. I remember going to these banquets where they would have just incredible amounts of desserts. And I would fill up a dinner plate, you know, with the desserts. And other people were doing it too, so I didn't think there was a problem. You know, my top weight was 225 pounds, and I did everything that I could to hide that from people. I was ashamed of my body. I didn't want you to see, you know, what was underneath it. And then I also was ashamed, you know, enough that that romantic relationships were difficult for me. So I ended up marrying my first husband was a large man, you know, and that way we could eat and drink together and I would always have him to look at. You know, he was large, so I wasn't going to be as large as he was. And so I was okay. I call some of those years in my, in between those early married years as being happy and fat. I used it as an excuse, you know, it's like, I'm fine. You know, I love to eat. I was raised in an Italian household. I was raised, you know, to clean your plate so you could get dessert. You know, eating a lot was a sign of good health, I thought. And I was really, really wrong about that. You know, one of the spiritual, you know, principles in our program is honesty. And so, you know, the things that I was doing back then was I was lying. I was lying to myself. I was lying to others. I had a sense of entitlement that I deserved the treats. You know, I had excuses and rationalizations. I need food for energy. Food was a comforter. There was a lot of that kind of lying that was going on for me. So finally, it was 2011, and I was again, my weight was going up and up, and my youngest niece was living with me, and I said to her, I need to go buy some new clothes because I'm growing out of the clothes that I'm wearing. And I wasn't happy about that, but I had to have clothes to wear. And she said to me, Auntie, don't do it. You've lost weight before. And I had tried all the pay and ways before. And she says, you'll do it again. I know you will. And at this point, I had a sponsor in my other program who was also an Overeaters Anonymous. And so I confided in her, you know, what my issue was. And she encouraged me to try OA. And it wasn't the first time that I'd heard about it. I had heard about it back probably in the 1990s. But this time I was desperate enough that I said I would try it. And it went to my first meeting. And so for a period of between 2011 and 2016, 2017, I was going to face-to-face meetings up in New Hampshire. And I learned a lot. You know, I learned a lot about the disease of compulsive overeating from the people in the meetings. I was working the steps in my, in my other program, and I thought that that was okay. You know, as long as I was working the steps in one program, that it should work for me. But my problem was I got really hung up on step four. I was in this long process of writing my fourth step, and it was taking years for this to get completed. And there were stops and starts along the way. The woman who was helping me with the step work would say to me, you know, you don't have to continue this if you don't want to. And I would say to her, I'm sorry. I started, I've got to finish it. And I was determined, but I lacked the perseverance that I needed in order to keep doing it. And so, within a couple of years, I kept the food down, and I was doing a lot of the tools. I was going to meetings. I was involved in service. I was actually on a retreat committee. I was doing the writing. I wasn't doing a lot with God, to be totally honest with you. And I struggled with that concept of God, really saying, really being able to do for me, that he would do for me what I couldn't do for myself. I needed to get that power into my life. I needed to get that that faith that God would do for me what I couldn't do for myself. So it was in 2022 when I came back to Overeaters Anonymous, and it was really a God shot. I had gotten an invitation to go to a meeting, and it was a Zoom meeting because we were still, a lot of the meetings had gone to Zoom after COVID. And, it was right after my birthday in 2022, and the food was all around me. And I sat down at the computer thinking it was a meeting for my other program. And I click on the camera, I click on the meeting, and guess what? It's an OA meeting. And I clicked that camera right off because I had a bowl of dessert sitting right in front of me. I couldn't let them see that I was eating. And I have to say that there was so much shame, for so many years. I tried to do it every other way, and none of it was working. And so at that point, I had to make a decision. Was I going to stay away from OA, or was I going to come back? I ate the dessert and I got on the meeting. So, so it wasn't exactly, a stellar moment for me, but the willingness was there anyway. And willingness is a very, very important principle that I try to live by today. So I got back, I got on the meeting, and the thought occurred to me that I knew about vision and I knew that this phone meeting was available to me. So I got the information and I got back on to the vision meeting the next day. I found a sponsor and I was desperate. I was really desperate. The first person that I spoke to that was willing to work with me, I just said, yes, I'll do. I'll do whatever you tell me to do. And we started doing the step work. And I want to tell you that it took a while. It took a while for me to get through the steps. And I dragged my feet somewhat, and she was frustrated, I know, at times with me because I had all of these other things going on in my life. I was married, I was working full time, I'd gone back to school, I was involved in my other program as doing service and sponsorship in the other program. So there was a lot going on. But what I've learned is that you have to put your most current, your most current problem right there on the front burner. And you can't put it on the back burner. You have to keep it right there in front of you. And so OA today is in my life every single day. We did the step work, and she was very helpful to me getting me through it. I wanted to be thorough, and she said that I was thorough. But I think she still lamented my lack of conscious contact with a higher power. I hadn't really gotten into the steps 11 and 12. I had not sponsored, in OA the first time as well as I could have. I had sponsored using the tools, but not the steps. And so it was, there came a point where she had to drop me because she said to me, Cheryl, you're not sponsoring. I can't help you any longer. And that really brought me to a new place where I really had to look at, what are you doing with your program, Cheryl? You know, are you really doing all that you need to do to retain your abstinence and to have a happy life in your abstinence? Because it's not just about, you know, being physically removed from the food, having a food plan, which I had, turning it over to a sponsor, which I did. I had to be doing the rest of the work. I had to be looking at myself on a daily basis, you know, doing that step 10 on a daily basis and looking at my day and trying to learn, you know, from my mistakes instead of trying to hide from them or pretend that they didn't exist. And so a few months after moving to Florida, I finally got back on board and I started to offer myself out as being a sponsor. And I'll tell you that I made a lot of mistakes in those early days of sponsoring. But what I have learned over the past few years is that you have to keep doing it because I had to keep doing it so I would get better at it. And today I have some wonderful, wonderful sponsees in my life. And they do help me a lot more, I think, than I help them because they help to keep me right in the middle of the boat where I belong. So, you know, a couple of the other things that I wanted to touch on today is some of these other principles, you know, that really were important to me. You know, in step two, we talk about hope and hope. And these, all of these principles, by the way, come from the OA 12 and 12. So the step one principle is honesty. We have honesty throughout our program. We have to be honest with ourselves. I had to be honest with my sponsors. And I have to be honest with the women that I sponsor. If I see something that doesn't look quite right, I have to be willing to tell them. And most of all, I just have to be honest with myself on a daily basis. Step two's principle is hope. Hope was once defined for me as hearing other people's experience. And, you know, I get that every day listening to the meeting on Vision for You. And I also get that by making outreach calls. And that's something that I'm really trying to work on these days because left to my own devices, I'll be in my head. And I need to be reaching out to people. I need to be reaching out and hearing other people's experience. You know, in the big book, there is an appendix at the back, and it's called Spiritual Experience. And if you read those pages, page 567 and 568, when you need hope, it says on page 568, any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problems can recover. And that's the hope that we offer here. That's the hope that I can share with somebody who is struggling. All I have to do is be willing to face my problems. That's all I had to do to get a glimmer of hope. In step three, we talk about the principle of faith. And so, you know, when I came in, I had a faith. You know, I was raised in a religious upbringing. You know, I attended church. And yet, you know, I believed in God, but I didn't believe that God would do for me what I couldn't do for myself. I thought that that he was just too busy, that there were big, big things going on in the world, and that it was really my responsibility to take care of my food issue myself. But what I've discovered is that, you know, by having faith in a higher power, by having faith in the God of my understanding, I have to quit playing God. And, you know, when we read the chapter, We Agnostics, I firmly believe that even though I believed in God, I still had agnostic tendencies. And those agnostic tendencies were whenever I thought I knew what was best for other people, whenever I was trying to direct the show. And so part of that faith for me is that I have to quit playing God. I have to stay close to him and perform his work well. And it talks about this in pages 62 and 63 of the big book. So step three for me is like enormously vital. And that step three prayer is something that I start my day off every day. I encourage my sponsees to do that step three prayer whenever they're getting ready to write their fourth step. I did step four with my sponsor and it did open up some some things that I needed to deal with, my relationships with my husband, my second husband, who is also in a recovery program. We have a wonderful life together today. And I was given a chance to really have a do-over, you know, with him and to start our marriage on a firmer foundation, on a better foundation, one of mutual respect and trust. And what I learned about myself in my step four was that I still relied on him for a lot of the financial security of our household. He was letting me do whatever I wanted to do in terms of my career. So I would frequently take jobs that didn't pay very well just because they made me happy. And I would just let him handle the finances. So one of the things that I really work on today is being responsible in a financial way, you know, with him. I had to be fearless and thorough, and looking at the relationships with my oldest niece was a challenging one. I had tried to rescue her from situations that were really overwhelming to her, and by giving her money. And what I discovered is that it wasn't really about that. You know, what she really needed was she needed somebody to be present in her life. And one of the things I've learned about myself is that it's more important to be present than to be perfect. I want to talk a little bit about this relationship with my brother, because he was married, and his wife passed away recently. And I think that this story is something that really resonates with me in terms of the transformation that has occurred in my life in the past year, most especially. So it was a year ago in March. I was getting ready to retire, and I had an opportunity to go away on a spiritual weekend. During the course of that spiritual weekend, it came to me that I still had resentments towards my sister-in-law. It had been difficult relations with her for over 20 years that she had been married to my brother. There were fits and starts in our relationship. There were times that we would get along wonderfully, and then there were times that she would just totally, you know, keep me out of her life, and I would just stay away. I would just stay away from her because I was afraid of her. And so when I went away on this spiritual weekend, a couple of things came up. First of all was my need to forgive her and to look for my part, you know, in that relationship. Where was I at fault? Where was, you know, what responsibility did I have in that relationship? And then the other thing that was important during that weekend is that I was asking God, what is my purpose now that I'm retired? I'm no longer working 40 hours a week, but I know I'm not just supposed to sit around the house. I know that you have something for me to do. So the first thing that happened was that I was instructed that I needed to forgive my sister-in-law. So I came home and I wrote an honest letter, and I shared it with my sponsors, and I rewrote it because I still needed to get to the heart of the matter. And then I contacted her, my sister-in-law, and I asked her if I could come and see her. And she allowed that to happen. So I sat with her. And what ended up coming out of that time with her was just, you know, my saying to her, Amita, I am sorry that I have not been the best sister-in-law that I could have been to you. I am sorry that I kept you at an arm's length. And she now had cancer and she was dying. And I said to her, Amita, I want to be there for you. I want to be there and I want to support you and do whatever it is that you need to make your life, you know, a lot better than it is right now. And then, you know, that was that, and she accepted my apology. A few months after that, she was again shutting me out of her life because I had brought my brother back to the faith of our youth, and she thought that I was interfering in their relationship and their marriage because she's not of the same faith. And so she shut me out again. And we went the entire summer without speaking to each other. I always had it in my heart that I would come back to her if she was willing, because I had to keep forgiving. You know, that's what I was told, is we don't just forgive once, we keep forgiving. So a spiritual healing happened between the two of us. And it happened in September, shortly after my birthday this past year. My husband and I, God bless my husband, made the decision to help my sister-in-law and my brother out by giving them my car. They had struggled with the two cars that they had, and they needed reliable transportation. And so we decided we were going to do this for them. We had no expectation as to be getting anything in return. On the day that we brought the car to them, my sister-in-law reached out to me, and she started to text me again. She insisted that we come into the house when we went down there, and she gave me a hug for the first time in a long, long time. And I was just so overjoyed. I was so relieved, you know, that finally something was happening here. I kept my heart open to it. Over the days that followed, she continued to send me text messages and to kind of clean house on her side, you know, to say that she was sorry that she hadn't realized that I had a kind heart, that I was sincerely trying to be helpful. Well, I didn't know this at the time, but my sister-in-law was to die a pretty short time after that. But what I was able to take out of that is that this is a spiritual healing that occurred between the two of us. And when I saw that, I knew that God worked in our lives, that God was responsible for this healing. It wasn't me. It was God. God broke through the walls of her heart and allowed this peace to flow between us. After my sister-in-law passed away, a new thing happened with my brother and I. My sister-in-law wanted to be buried in Israel where she was born, and my brother was determined that he was going to have this happen. It was early in January of this year, and my brother was scheduled to get on a plane, and he couldn't get on the plane because his visa wasn't in order. He was going to fly to Israel by himself. When I saw my brother that day, my heart just broke for him. And I immediately started calling my sponsors to say, what do I do? What do I do? I'm so powerless. And what I kept hearing was action. What action can you take? Because that's what I do today. I don't sit in self-pity. Is I take action. I ask God for help. And so between that afternoon and the next morning, I prayed, and what came to me is that you're supposed to go with your brother. He's not supposed to do this by himself. Now, mind you, I do not have a passport, and it usually takes months for a passport to happen. And I had the idea before, but the idea went quickly to the side because it was a ridiculous idea, right? So what ended up happening is that I was able to make arrangements to go to Miami and to get a passport. And I believe that God opened all the doors that needed to happen so that I could travel with my brother to Israel. And we could bring his wife's remains back to her family and give her a proper burial. On Thursday, January 22nd, we went to the airport and we just glided through everything. There was no difficulty whatsoever. We got on the plane together, we sat next to each other, and we held hands, and we traveled to Israel. And while I was in Israel, I met her family. I got to know a lot more about my sister-in-law and to realize where she came from and to realize what her values were like. And she is a person to me today that I know on a different level than I ever knew before. I was able to reach out to the women that I sponsor, to my family, giving them a message of hope. Never give up on a relationship because you just don't know, you know, what's in store. You don't know if there will be a chance for reconciliation. So at the end here, I'm gonna just tell you what my life has been like since I retired, because it is a total transformation from what I was focused on before. You know, I went away on that retreat and I came back with a commitment to sponsor, to work with women in both of my fellowships, to offer myself of service wherever it's necessary, to reach out to my church community to see how I can be of service there and to grow my spiritual life. So today I have a couple of apps that I you know, regularly pay attention to. I have quiet time in the morning with my higher power. I listen to a meditation. I read spiritual literature, and I write in journal, and I write a letter to God. Today, God wrote back to me, and that's always a miracle. That's always a wonderful thing when that happens, because sometimes I get anxious, and sometimes I have doubts about myself, and sometimes my behavior is not great. You know, I had two times this week where I became defensive, and I had an issue. And I had to make amends. I had to do a 10th step on it immediately, a spot check inventory. After my morning meditation, I do my food plan. You know, I write it out for the day. I send it to my sponsor and to my dietitian. You know, I go about my day. I have appointments every day. What's on your calendar? I heard somebody say once. So what's on my calendar is time with sponsees. Meetings I attend. I attend in-person meetings and in the meeting on Vision for You as much as I possibly can. You know, I exercise. I had a fall while I was in Israel, so I'm in PT right now, but I'm doing the PT, you know. As I go through the day, this is the important thing for me today. Pause when agitated or doubtful and ask for the right thought or action to come. I'm still working on that. I'm still very, very new in this program. God isn't done with me yet. There's so much more for me to learn. At the end of the day, I do a gratitude list. I have an app on my phone that has captured over 900 gratitude lists over the past few years. Over 9,000. I have over 9,000 gratitudes on my phone. And I try to find the gratitudes in each day. And you know, one of the things that I've discovered is that I can be grateful for the difficulties today, because those are the things that bring me to God. That's what reminds me that I need my higher power, that I can't do this alone. I do a nightly review. It includes a 10th step. You know, and in the morning when I awake, you know, I read upon awakening, I listen to my meditation, and I read a daily reflection and other literature. You know, this is a wonderful life. It's a life that I never dreamed possible. I have a life that's second to none. I have a wonderful relationship with my husband. You know, I have women that I can trust, women I reach out to. I have my God squad of people, and it's just a wonderful life. So I think with that, I'm going to pass. Thank you so very much, Larry.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks, Cheryl. We're so appreciative. Very authentic and presentation, and one filled with vulnerability. So we have a great debt to you this morning. Now, we're going to transition to the Q&A phase of the program this morning. But before we do that, first, a couple of things. One, let me give you the share ID number for the presentation this morning. That number is 23,247. That's 23247. And then also stick around, hang out till the end of the recorded portion of the presentation this morning. We'll ask Cheryl L. for her contact information. Again, Cheryl. Is Cheryl from Florida. So with that, we're going to move over to Q&A. If you have a question for Cheryl, questions only, please press star one and unmute your phone and give me your name, and we'll line up for some questions for Cheryl. Cheryl, if you have them. Who has a question?
Jane F. from Florida.
Jane. Gotcha, Jane. Who else? And I heard Jane and anybody else? And you press star one to unmute your phone.
This is Nancy. Nancy?
Yeah, Nancy. We'll get you in the lineup. We got Jane and Nancy. Anybody else? Okay,
Lorraine.
Let's start with that. I'm sorry, was that Lori or Lorraine?
Maureen H.
Oh, Maureen. Gotcha, Maureen.
Thank you.
Anybody else?
Elaine F., New York.
Gotcha, Elaine. Jane, Nancy, Maureen, and Elaine. Anybody else? All right, let's start with these four, and then kind of we'll see where we're at from there. So we got Jane. Hi, Suri. We got you on the end there. So let's start with Jane, Nancy, Maureen, Elaine, Suri. If you're not Jane, if you would mute your phone again, we would appreciate that. And Jane, what question do you have for Cheryl this morning?
Good morning. My name is Jane S., and I am from Florida and New Hampshire. Larry, thanks for your service. Cheryl, thank you for your gentle way. My question is this: how does God help you to practice throughout the day these principles? And I love how you said the opposites of your character defects. How does that manifest in your life?
Thank you, Jane, for the question. And thank you for being on the line this morning. During the course of the day, you know,
Cheryl, you may have gotten muted. If you would try to unmute yourself again, it looks like we've
sorry about that.
All right. No worries.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks, Jane, for the question. So yesterday I had a situation that I think demonstrates this pretty well. I was doing my volunteer work at the food pantry, and the head volunteer, this is the lead guy, and he's been there for like 15 years or so, so he really knows the whole lay of the land. And he approached me because we had too many volunteers, and this is my role, is the scheduling of volunteers. And so, you know, what happened was I got defensive, you know, with him, because I work hard at this and have kind of taken ownership of it, and I made it personal. And I started to talk to him in a way that he used to talk to my old bosses. You know, defensiveness is a character defect of mine. And as I'm talking to him, you know, I'm hearing this thing in the back of my head, and I'm sure this is God speaking to me, saying, Cheryl, you're being defensive. Just relax, just pause, and change your tone of voice. And so I did. I first apologized to him, and I said to him, I'm sorry, I'm getting defensive here. You know, let me try to listen to you a lot better. And so I went from a place of being defensive to a place of being open and to listening. And that's what my higher power wants for me. So I hope that helps. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Jane. Okay, next up with the question, we have Nancy followed by Maureen. Nancy, good morning to you.
Good morning to you. Thank you so much, Cheryl. What a wonderful and powerful share this morning. My question is, When you approached your sister-in-law and asked for forgiveness and everything got good again with you and her, but then when she started to disappear again and become distant, how did you approach her the second time, or how did you get that connection back? Thank you.
You're welcome. And thank you, Nancy, for the question. So, It was a very, very difficult summer, and I mean, there was some really, really painful things that she was saying to me, and there was a time when I questioned whether I should block her, because it was, you know, some of the things were just so hurtful to me. But I was told, no, you don't do that, because that's only going to make matters worse. You have a choice, you know, whether you want to read these text messages or not. And so I just didn't. I just didn't read them. You know, I would read the beginning, I would see what it was like, and then I would just say, okay, I'm not going to pay attention to this. And one of the things I want to say is that, you know, when these disturbances crop up, I have to, you know, say the sick man's prayer. God save me from being angry. You know, this is a sick person. How can I be helpful to them? And the way that I could be helpful is by helping my brother. And so I looked for ways that I could be helpful to my brother through that whole summer. And there were things that I could do because we live closer to each other now. And so really the opening of the door came from her. You know, when we told my brother that we were going to give him the car, it relieved a lot of anxieties, you know, for both of them. And, you know, and I don't know. I think God just worked on her heart. And so she was the one who opened that door so that we could have some communication again, you know, and I'm so grateful for that because, you know, when she passed, she went back into a dark place again. It was a very, very hard time. She was in so much pain, and the pain was speaking. It wasn't her so much. It was her pain. And she went into this dark place again. But I knew that God had cracked her heart open. And so I knew that she had a God in her life and that he was going to take care of her. So I hope, I don't know if I answered your question or not, but...
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Nancy. Okay, next up we have Maureen followed by Elaine. Maureen, your turn.
Yes.
Good morning.
This is Maureen, recovered in South Carolina. I have a question for Cheryl. What do you say or do to someone who just has difficulty with the God word and trying to get past step three?
Yeah, thank you for the question. And you know, I work with women who have, you know, all different types of beliefs. I actually have, I had a woman that was an agnostic, you know, and so I always look for, you know, what is the power of good in your life? You know, what are your deepest values? And I have a very valuable workbook that I use that I can discuss with you offline if you'd like. And in that workbook, it addresses, you know, how to work with people who have, who don't, you know, have difficulty with God. And one of the terms that they use in it is your deepest values. So I think that we all have these very deep values that we want to live by. You know, we want to be honest. We want to be helpful. You know, we want to be loving. And so in the chapter, We Agnostics, it talks about, you know, all of these different aspects of God, you know, the sunlight of the spirit, right? Creative intelligence. So it's whatever you choose to call it. It's just so important that it's not, you know, it's not you. I had to realize it wasn't me, that it was something greater than me. And I'll also say that at the very beginning that that the fellowship was my higher power, the meetings were my higher power, because, you know, I was seeing people who were happy, and that's what I wanted. I wanted to be happy, and I wanted to be able to handle life on life's terms. You know, I saw people that were going through some very, very difficult circumstances, and then my problems were minuscule compared to theirs. And I saw them do it courageously. And so I, you know, my sponsors, yes, my sponsors were my higher power for a while because I wanted what they had. And so I was willing to do what they, you know, what they did. Hope that helps. Thank you.
Thanks, Maureen. Okay, we have Elaine followed by Suri. Elaine, good morning to you.
Hi, this is Elaine S. from New York. Thank you so much for your service, both of you and everybody else who's behind the scenes. And my question is, let me just give it a little tiny bit of background. For the past few months, I've been feeling depressed, and which isn't normal for me. And we moved to New York 2 years ago. There's a lot of snow. It's been a cold winter. And I just found myself getting into this depression, and I'm abstinent, food has been calling me absent. And I wonder, how have you, you know, you've shared some of it, but how have you turned your mood around as you've, you know, as you retired? How have you stayed on track? And that's it.
Yeah,
thank you.
Thank you for the question. I suffered from depression too. And it was, you know, I was diagnosed with generalized anxiety disorder back many, many years ago. And so I saw a counselor for that. And that helped, you know, that helped that I could just go to someone and I could just talk to them. And it was part of that, you know, that was part of my coming into recovery too, because, you know, I found myself saying things to her. And it was like, you got to do something about this. You just can't keep on living your life this way. So talking to somebody and just hearing yourself, you know, sharing, you know, what it is that that's going on inside of you, I think is very important. So the depression has definitely, you know, gotten down to a very, very small thing for me. I'd still like to be, you know, by myself. But I can go and be with people for a period of time, and I find that putting myself with other people really helps. It gets me out of myself, and then I can come back to my home and I can have my quiet time. So trying to find a balance of alone time plus time with people, I think, has been very important for me. And then just what am I feeding myself? You know, what's the spiritual food that I'm feeding myself? I decided a few years ago to stop watching the news because I was getting a lot of anxiety over what I was seeing on television. And so I really don't watch television that much anymore. And instead what I do is I listen to music and I read and I write and I have my hobbies and I have my program. And so that provides me with a very, very full life. I don't have time to think about myself as much anymore. Thanks for the question.
Thank you so much. Thanks, very helpful.
Thanks, Elaine. Okay, Suri, good morning to you.
Good morning. My apologies if this was shared earlier. I lost connection a few times during the share. So my question is, when you say things like God, you know, you could hear God's voice telling you, and how do you stay grounded in those moments? Because it almost sounds like not normal. It sounds, you know, what are you, a prophet? Like, what are you, like, when you say you have those moments, and then especially in terms of when you're using higher power and you're approaching these reconnections with complex relationships with family members, how do you stay grounded? Is there a specific thing that you do then with programs? And do you find that it affects your food before or after?
Thank you for the question. First thing I'm going to say is that I have achieved food neutrality, and that's only by the grace of God again that I've been able to do that. And so I'm very grateful for that. And I'll say one other thing about food neutrality is that a little over a year ago, I got diagnosed with a medical condition that required me to change my food plan and to cut things out that I had been used to eating that were abstinent foods for me. And there's no way that I would have been able to do that without the discipline of my food plan. So that's important to me. Staying grounded. You know, anything that I think I'm receiving guidance from a higher power on, I need to check it out with others. And so, you know, my sponsors are great at that. They're great at, you know, I can reach out to them and say, look, this is what's come to me. And what do you, you know, what do you think of that? You know, I have one sponsor that that always reminds me that I need to make sure I'm taking care of myself, because I have a tendency to overextend. And so she tells me frequently to wear a life like a loose garment. And I hear that. I hear that when I'm considering, you know, the actions that I want to take. And I have another sponsor who is very, very deep in her faith. And so she will help me from, you know, from that perspective, you know. And so I think sponsorship is a very important part of that. And then I've also found that reaching out to, I have some people in program that I really trust. And so reaching out to them whenever I have an important decision to make. You know, getting ready for today, you know, I reached out to several people because I've never done anything like this before. And so I got some guidance on how I should proceed. You know, no, I'm not a prophet. No, I'm just a compulsive overeater who's trying to walk with God. And, you know, I kind of visualize, you know, my higher power today and I on the highway, you know, and sometimes I get detoured. Sometimes I end up in the breakdown lane, you know, and I have to, you know, get my car back in good running order, you know, in order to get back onto that highway where I belong with all the rest of my brothers and sisters in recovery. So, yeah, I'm definitely not a prophet. I definitely have a long way to go. I'm not going to ever get perfect on this earth. And the important thing for me is to see where I make mistakes and to be ready to admit it and to ask for forgiveness and to be willing to do the next right thing. So when I do make mistakes, I have to talk to my higher power about, you know, what's the right thing for me to do here? You know, do I approach this individual? Or is by approaching them going to cause further harm? You know, I have a situation in my way, way back, you know, past that I could not make direct amends to, you know, my sister for because it would have hurt her. But what I did instead was I changed my behavior. So I'm not that person that I once was. You know, I try to take a high road today. Thank you.
Thanks, Suri. Okay, so we have time. If there are more questions, press star one. And if you'd like to pose a question to Cheryl, we can take that now. Who has a question?
Hi. Oh, hi, my name is Ted from New Jersey. I'd like to ask a question.
Okay, hang tight, Ted. I got you. Anybody else?
Dora. Yeah.
Dora? Got you.
Brendan.
Got you. Brendan. And Maura? Okay, we got Ted, Dora, Brendan, and Maura. And anybody else? Okay, let's go with that. So first question from Ted. Good morning, Ted.
Good morning, Larry. Thank you.
Oh, there you go.
Thank you, Speaker. My name is Ted. I'm a compulsive eater binger from New Jersey. And my question is, I sometimes feel like I try to be a saint and Mr. Perfect. And I'm just wondering if you have any suggestions or about perfectionism, like when I make a human mistake, not even like a sin or whatever, sure. But a few mistake, I tend to beat myself over that because more, you know, unrealistic expectations on myself. So if you could offer any kind of help with that, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
Great question, Ted. Thank you. Thank you so much. A few years ago, I was working at a supermarket up in New Hampshire, and I was in a management position. And I sat down with the manager for my review, and she told me about how hard I was on myself. And, you know, and so this was coming through, you know, and this was only about, you know, 3 or 4 years ago that I had perfectionistic tendencies. Oh, I knew it. I knew it to the core. It was probably a defect I identified back in the 1990s. Was I willing to let it go? You know, and it's a struggle. It's definitely a struggle. So what she said to me, though, meant a lot, and so I'll share it with you. She said to me, she said, when you are hard on yourself, it leaks out to other people. And so my expectations of myself can be transferred to others. And when that happens, then I'm putting myself above them. Even though I may not intend to do it, it's happening. It's happening. And you know, I share my nightly reviews with my sponsees, and I had a sponsee come to me once, and she said, I can't possibly measure up to what you're doing. And I said, that's not what I'm asking. I'm not asking you to do that. I'm sharing this with you because I want to be open with you. You know, I want to be open and honest and to let you see that I'm not perfect, that I have, you know, these tendencies. And I hope that she understood, she, you know, accepts that and that she believes that today. You know, every person has their own program, their own way of doing things. So one of the things that I think helps me with perfectionism today is that when I'm able to forgive myself, then I can be of better service to others. If I'm sitting there and I'm beating up on myself, I'm not being of service. I'm not being of service to myself. I'm certainly not being of service to anybody else because I'm too focused on myself. So I got to get out of myself and I have to put my attention on, you know, who can I help? How can I serve others today? So I hope that helps, Ted.
Thanks, Ted. Okay, we have Dora followed by Brendan. Dora, good morning to you.
Good morning, Cheryl. Thank you. You mentioned having an experience with your niece where you rescued her with money and you weren't present. Could you tell me also if that you still had to help her with money and expand on that experience?
Sure, I'd be happy to, Dora. Thank you. So it was, we were still living in New Hampshire, and my niece was the only one at the time who had children, and she was divorced, and she had a live-in boyfriend. And sadly, the boyfriend committed, he had a drug overdose in their apartment, and he died. And it left my niece in really poor financial straits. And what she was ready to do was to give the children up to their father and to let the father, you know, raise them. And I thought at the time it's incredibly important for her to keep the children. And so my husband and I helped her with rent money for about a year. Shortly after that time was over, I discovered some things that were really disturbing. And it made me start to question whether or not she had been using the money for rent after all. When I made my amends to her, what I felt was that what she needed from me was she needed my attention more than she needed my money. That I was trying to kind of buy my way out of that situation to solve the problem by just giving her money. You know, and what she said to me in return was that she hadn't been honest with me. So we were able to have a conversation about that. So I did learn more about that. Now, I will say that today we do have a relationship. She's trying to get in recovery again. And so we're able to have communication with each other. And that I'm not trying to fix her problems with money anymore. I'm trying to just be there as a loving aunt and to be supportive of her in her recovery program and to encourage her to move towards her higher power and to surround herself with people in recovery. And so that's the story. Thank you.
Thanks, Dora. Okay, Brendan, you're next, followed by Maura. What question do you have, Brendan?
Hi. Can you hear me?
I can.
Hello. Okay, great. My name is Brendan. Thank you so much for sharing. Appreciate your share. You talked about your fourth step and getting hung up on that. And you were like determined to finish it. I was curious, how did you transition in that with your fourth step? Where it got, like, you began working on it, and I assume you got it finished because you're sharing. And what were some of the tools that you used to make that happen?
Mm-hmm. Thanks for the question, Brendan. So basically, it was a complete do-over. You know, the years-long inventory process, you know, of writing down every single resentment I could think of, got put aside, you know, because it wasn't really being helpful to me. And when I got a vision sponsor, she took me through the steps a lot more quickly. She gave me a deadline, and I think I took 1 month to write my fourth step, you know, with her, under her direction. And so, you know what, after that, I was able to start, you know, changing, able to start, you know, making amends and to becoming, you know, a person that my creator intended for me to be. Thanks for the question.
Thanks, Brendan. Okay, Maura, it's your turn. Good morning.
Thanks, Larry, for your service.
Maura, we lost you for a moment.
Can you hear me now?
I can, you bet.
Okay, sorry about that. Technology
right.
is what it is. I don't know what you heard. So thank you, Larry. Thank you, Cheryl. And my question is,
hey, Maura, I think you're muted again for some reason. We heard my question is, and then you went blank.
Can you hear me now?
I can, yeah.
Okay. I'll just say it real fast. Cheryl, have you found it necessary? Do you find it helpful? And have you gone through the steps 1 through 12 again?
Good question, Maura. Good question. I've done other fourth steps since the first time that I did them in 22. And so that's, you know, that's been helpful to me. Am I willing to go through the steps again? Absolutely. Absolutely. Always have to remain willing to do that.
Thanks, Maura. Okay, we have time if there happens to be perhaps one or two questions left. If not, we can move towards closing this morning. Press star 1 if you do have a question.
Honeyetta.
Okay, Honeyetta.
Nick F.
And good morning, Nick.
Good morning.
Let's go with those two. Okay, so let's start with Honeyetta, and then we'll close out with a question from Nick. Honeyetta, good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Larry, for your service. And, excuse me, Cheryl, thank you for your wonderful share. You know, somebody had brought up about, are you a prophet because you feel like you hear God? I also hear God, and I'm certainly not a prophet. But have you ever thought of it as the fact that when you hear God, that you know that it's not you telling you these things, and you just feel that when things turn out right, when you do things that you hear, then you feel like that was from God. And when things turn out mm-hmm. really bad, then you know that it was your thoughts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know how you decide what's from God and what's from you.
Thanks, Honeyetta. It's good to hear you this morning. Yeah. You know, that whole thing with traveling to Israel, I really believed it was a God directive. because I had had the thought and dismissed it. I said, it's ridiculous. It's, you know, it's not common sense. And, you know, in that line in the book where it says, common sense thus becomes uncommon sense. And I think I've read something about, you know, God's ideas seem foolish to the world. You know, and so those types of things kind of sit with me. You know, I think, you know, at the time I questioned, you know, is this really what you want me to do? You know, I had to talk to my husband about this, you know, and just say, look, you know, this is what, you know, I think I need to do. And are you okay with this? And he was supportive. He said, yes, if that's what you feel like you need to do, then do it. But the confirmation came for me when we went through everything so smoothly, you know, when the doors just opened up for everything to happen, you know, in the time that it needed to happen. That for me was confirmation that this was supposed to happen. And also the way that my brother responded to it all. I think my brother wanted me to be with him all along, but just was afraid to ask. And so, you know, when it all comes together like that, I really have to believe it was God's will. You know, when I went away on that retreat weekend last year, in a sense, God was your purpose for me. You know, he put people in that retreat that were in recovery program. And one of them I was supposed to help. And I did. I was able to reach out to her and she reached back to me a couple months later and asked me for help. So my purpose, to be sponsoring, to be helping women in recovery, yes, definitely. You know? So when I know that it's not God's will, things definitely do not turn out the way my expectations, you know, are premeditated resentments. And when I expect myself to be like, you know, in charge of great corporations like Bill was, right? Like that's what his dream was. He's going to be a great leader. You know, I don't usually get there, and that's okay today. But I have to set my sights a little bit lower. Like I have to set my sights on, okay, you know, what would God have me do today? So I think that's it. Thanks a lot, Hanietta.
Thanks, Hanietta. Okay, a final question. Let's go out to Tennessee. What's up, Nick? Good morning.
Good morning, family. I'm Nikki up in Tennessee. Thank you, Larry. And to Cheryl, thank you. And dear, do you get mad at God? And if you do, how do you work the steps on it then and now?
Nick, it's so good to hear you on the line. Thank you for the question. Do I get mad at God? I think my anger comes out in tears. That's how I express my anger. And I had a moment of anger last summer. And I wrote about it. I had to just get it out there on paper, and I had to turn it over to people. I had to share it with people and get some perspective from them. You know, one of the things that the steps have taught me is that, you know, first of all, I'm not just powerless over food and my other substances. I'm also powerless over people and circumstances. You know, I have to turn them over to God's loving care and direction. You know, I recognize today that I don't know what God's plan is for anybody. I can't see that far ahead. I can only see today, and not even all of the day. And one of the things that has helped me is to say, you know, God knows the future, so I don't have to. You know, God knows what the plan is. So that niece that you know, has struggled so mightily, you know, I feared that she would end up dead before her time. You know, and I feared that I would be absolutely crushed by it. And so that's, you know, that's where the difficulty comes for me, is from my fear. And what do I need to do? I need to trust and rely on God. know, that my God is a loving God, that he doesn't want any harm to come to anyone. You know, if I have a resentment, we have a tradition here in Florida where we can go to a meeting, pick up a resentment marble, and pray for the person, place, or situation that we have a resentment towards. And if I pray for that person long enough, and that's what I did with my sister-in-law, I pray. You know, then I get to bring that resentment marble back. And I can just wish for that person and pray for that person to have all the happiness that I have in my life. Hope that helps. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Nick. Good way to close. And thank you to everybody for your questions and folks around the line. And a special, special thank you to Cheryl L. from Florida. Cheryl, thank you. Just terrific job. We have much gratitude and thankfulness for you this morning. So, okay, folks, time to close up this spiritual kindergarten deal here. Let me give you the share ID for Cheryl's presentation again. That number is 23,247. That's 23247. We're going to hang out as soon as the recording is over. We'll ask Cheryl for her contact information if you care to reach out to her. And we'll do that in just a moment. But I'm going to read now from page 164 in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. So our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order, but obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.